Here we go. It's 3 minutes after the hour. CBS Radio online, and we have still a bunch of people joining in here on the conference call phone line. I welcome you all, and those who just participated here on the call, please location.
Hi, it's Kim from Minnesota.
Good morning. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Vaughn in North Hollywood.
Hi, Vaughn. Welcome to the call.
Thank you, Heis.
Hi, Vaughn.
Hi, whoever that is.
I'm Teresa.
How are you?
Here lately, if you want to, please say your name and location. Background noise. All right. Thank you. So I know more people have joined in. If you want to, you may say your name and location. But that's okay. We
Do I see Anna in Berkeley on the call?
She's here, yes.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Wynn. I'm glad to hear you.
No, I wish I could say the same about myself.
Where are you, Wynn?
There's a cynical remark from the guy. How you doing, buddy?
Good morning, Carla. That was me calling you just as you were calling us.
I figured that was what was going on, but when I tried to turn you on, I turned you off. That sounds kind of weird, doesn't it?
I had a nickel for every time a woman said that to me.
The question is, if you had a nickel for every time a woman said that to you, would you be rich or would you be poor?
The question is,
I'm not saying
about it.
Are we on BBS?
Yes, sir.
I think Doug was snoozing today. I had to tell him to put us on. All right.
Doug, yeah. You're forgiven, my friend.
Terry.
Oh, thank you, guys. Love you.
Is that Doug?
Yes.
Is that?
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know what I like about you, Doug? You're better than Don. You know why? When you are feeling in a neutral space, you sound it. But Don never shows that. Hey, this is Don! You know that about him?
Doug is older than his brother, you know?
Yeah.
He is?
Yeah.
I thought you were twins.
A couple of minutes older.
I see.
I'd be older.
I always wonder on the other side how that works. Are they competing to get out?
Birds. The wrong thing.
All right. Hi, Vaughn. I see Vaughn there. I am going to mute everybody. Good morning. This is Wynn.
This is Wendy.
Who is that?
Wendy. Wendy in Las Vegas.
Oh, Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
How are you?
I am fine. I'm not supposed to answer that. I am fine, though, okay? I made an exception in your case.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right.
Keep the lines up, okay? It's very noisy.
There we go. We got everybody muted. And do I sound pretty clear today, Heinz?
You sound great.
I do? Okay.
Is Terry here yet? No, is he, do you know about her? Oh, she is here.
Terry is here, but I don't think she's picked up the phone.
Okay.
I know she's here because I can see her. Okay.
That helps.
Right.
And if I can see her, well, that's not an absolute kind of...
For longer.
thing, but in general, it works. I got I need to see something, yeah. Let me turn this. All right, our chimes are off, and it is...
This conference is being recorded.
10.08 a.m., and this is July 7th, 2013, Wynn and Terry in Rochester, New York, and Carla in Kentucky, and Hives in Magalia, California. And this is our Sunday grid healing call. And in case you're wondering what we're doing in Rochester, New York, if you hadn't gotten, I think I mentioned it, but Terry's brother had passed away last week, and the funeral was yesterday. And, Friday. The funeral was on Friday. And so I told Terry I would fly back with her and keep her company while she goes to the funeral. And, of course, this is her hometown. This is where she was brought up in. And some of you, Terry doesn't usually talk about her upbringing. And since she's not on the line, she can just kick me, but she's not on the line to correct me. Terry, can I talk about your upbringing?
Yeah.
She said, okay. Terry, I can say anything, right? You can kick me if you don't like what I'm saying, right? Okay. I'll let you know if she kicks me. Terry's brother was a very artistic type. Now, some of you don't know this, but Terry is an artistic type. And when she was younger, she was painting, and she is an awesome painter. And she says she has a memory of being some famous guy's assistant or student. Who was that, Terry? Rembrandt. And in fact, there was some Rembrandt painting that she painted, she says, that Rembrandt put his actual signature on. Or you put a signature on it. Uh-oh, Sherry, that's going to ruin your reputation. That was another lifetime, okay? She remembers that. And so, I met Terry's brother, and he was a very ornery guy, slightly crazy. And he would, one time, he came to visit her, and he was in the car, and he took over the steering wheel and wouldn't let go of it. And he just had this obsessive personality and kind of lived the latter part of his life in a home, a rehabilitation home. I don't know if they'd call it a rehabilitation, because I don't think they were planning on rehabilitating them. And then when Terry's mother was alive, now Terry's mother was a really interesting person. She was a painter. She was an architect, not licensed, but she did all these historic buildings in Rochester. And about a year ago, Terry found out her mother was written up in this book, maybe less than a year ago, of the 50, what was the book, Terry? The 50... The first 50 women architects in San Francisco. Actually, her mother went to school in Berkeley. And back here in, it's actually not Rochester. It's about 10 miles from Rochester. It's called Spencerport here in Spencerport, there is a historical society, and they're all making a fuss about Terry's mother because she had been involved in all these buildings here in Rochester that are historical, that are old. And so we live in a town called, she lives in a town, she lived in a town called Spencerport. And we went to the funeral, and now Richard was basically took care of his mother, or actually drove his mother around, did the errands, and was kind of his mother's right-hand person in terms of just getting the mundane tasks done until he ended up in this home. And Terry's mother, who I think she passed about 5 years ago or 6 years, 7 years ago, and Richard were all buried in the same plot, or in the same spot in the cemetery, not in the same plot. And so we went to the funeral, and there were probably five people there, including Terry and myself. Is that right, Terry? Five? Anybody else? Well, one of the people was a lady named Spencer, whose husband was part of the founding of the town. It's called Spencerport. And the other woman was from the Historical Society. And then, oh no, there were four people. There was Terry's childhood friend and anybody else? Is that it? The head of the funeral home. And so they were all, some of them were paying respects to Richard because of his mother, because of what he did. But I would say the most interesting part of the funeral was when everybody left and Terry said, could we stay a little bit? So we sat down, and then for the next 15 minutes, Terry was talking to Richard, who apparently was hanging out over the casket and hanging up near his body. In fact, Terry wanted to go back a second time to talk to him. And it was the challenge of her. She was trying to release Richard, and Richard was still wanting to go back and help his mother at the house that he grew up in. So there's never a dull moment here. And we're still here in Spencerport. And Terry is going to visit a couple more of her friends before we go back. And Carla, did you ever have connection with deceased people?
No, I never did.
You never did. Well.
Sorry, but
That's okay. That's okay. I think that's a unique talent in of itself. I mean, I have been amazed at some of the things. You know, I've known Terry for a long time. And when I was, you know, years ago, I used to think she was a nutcase. I shouldn't say that, but I did. I couldn't believe some of the stuff she was talking about because she had this sight into other realms. And she would talk about it as if it was just there. And my logical, intellectual side couldn't believe it was true. And even on some of these phone calls that we've done, I mean, if you go back and look at the track of them, there's times when on our Wednesday call, somebody in South Dakota had talked about their land of their house being haunted. And Terry is channeling, and she starts talking to a bunch of Indians, or about them, with the Elohim. And, I mean, the story is that they were, you know, they were, I think they died on that land or something, and they were hanging out on it, and that they agreed to leave. Well, I think one of the things that I've noticed about all this stuff about deceased people is when you die, you don't know that you can move around. You don't know that you can leave. You're stuck in a position very often.
Well, if it happens suddenly, this is Carl.
Yeah.
If it happens suddenly, you don't know, and especially if there is an emotion. I don't want to change the subject, but I have a heck of a story on that. So let me know when you'd like me to tell it, because I also ran into some Indians on land that we had and had to work it out.
You mean dead ones or live ones?
Dead ones. Dead ones a long time ago.
Dead ones a long time ago.
But
so you have
there was an energy there to the land that was driving the people that were living there crazy, and they were having visions, and it was, they knew that I channeled. I mean, I've been doing it for a long time, and they said, please help. You want me to go on, or you want to go on with what you were saying? Anyway, it's an interesting story.
You're not off topic. You see, I think these are very interesting things to talk about, and
okay.
very few people really can talk about it with any sense of understanding. So everyone's going to die. So, you know, these kind of memories of how it feels and what happens might be helpful.
All right. So I went down to Avalon. It was our land, and oh, how I love that land. We just sold it. We just finished selling it. We tried to start a farm there, and it's too expensive. We couldn't do it. Long story short. So we had to give up on it. Didn't have enough money to keep it going. And it's a beautiful thing, but somebody else appreciates it, and we're glad to give it into good hands. But at any rate, it needed clearing badly. So I went down there, and I rested there for a while. And I became aware that there were some people there that wanted to talk to me. So I opened up. And I discovered that a small group of Indians had camped. They were moving west. They had been kicked out. This was during that 19th century time when the people were very aggressive settlers, American settlers, shoving the Indians out and taking over. And it was also the time of the Civil War. And there was a lot of unrest because of people trying to come home and people not wanting the war to end, and it was very difficult. At any rate, there were two groups of people having difficulties. One was a small group of Indians, and they were just innocently parked there for a little while on their way west, and doggone if a group of white people didn't simply slaughter them where they lay, and didn't even bury them. And the other problem, which was, I had to sort of sort this out, but the other problem was that one brother that lived on this land had fought for the Confederacy. The other one had fought for the United States. And so blue against gray, as happens so often in Kentucky, it was totally split up so many families because of these disagreements. And they got into a horrible argument, and one of them shot the other. So that guy was dead. And then both of them died because they had both gotten shot. One of them died quick, one of them died slow. But the energy of all of this was there. So I said, look, hang on, I'm coming back. So I got my prayer book that had a funeral service, and I got everything I could find from what I was guessing was this, what brand of Indians they were. I thought they were probably of the seven tribes that made up Cherokee, Seneca, and so forth. So I found those beliefs. I found someone that had written about them. And so every place that there was a place to put in readings, instead of from the Bible, I read from this guy's writings. And, of course, it was very spiritual because Indians have an extremely spiritually based outlook on life. So it was a beautiful funeral service. And I told everybody, you know, this is for all of you. And I sang some hymns. I went through the funeral service. I went through the burial service. I spent a lot of time with it, and I put a lot of energy into it. And my husband, Jim, who was able to go along with me and believe me, where most people, as you say, Wynn, just think you're loony. But, you know, he went along with it, and so I had his help, like a good battery that was powering me up. And after the funeral service, the land was clear. They needed burial. They needed closure, and then they could go on. So it was such a blessing to be able to help them out. Terry, did Terry have that kind of luck where she was able to help them move on?
She did. Terry, are you on the line yet? She was just getting on the line. I wanted her to, since we're talking about her so much.
She's here now.
Terry, are you there? We don't hear you yet. Oh, we hear you.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
I don't think I'm on as a moderator, but I unmuted myself.
All right.
Just got on.
So we're talking about Indians, and I started talking about that time you had that clearing situation in South Dakota. And Carla was talking about a time that she succeeded in doing that for someone. And why don't you complete the story of what happened in South Dakota? When you...
There were a lot of hauntings going on at the houses, and there were a lot of people that were very scared, and some of the people were thinking of moving or had started moving out of the area because of all of the scary things that were happening in their houses. And so Jean was on the line, and Jean's very perceptive, and she brought up the question of could we clear it. So we called in the Elohim, and this very tall Indian named Blue Feather appeared, and he was very, very angry. He said that the white people had taken over the area and driven the Indians out or killed the Indians, and that those they were the ones that were left didn't have bodies, but they wanted to drive out the white people, and they were totally committed to driving out the white people and doing away with the white people, and so they could have their land back. And the Elohim were there, and they were listening to what the Indian was saying, and he said that he didn't really want to have anything to do with us in the or the Elohim, and that the Elohim, he was afraid that the Elohim wanted to change his mind. And the Elohim were very compassionate with him, and they said that they didn't want to change him, and they weren't there to change him. But they were very concerned about that he was working so hard, and he was under so much stress, and he'd undergone so many hard things that they wanted to give him a moment of rest. And they were very concerned about him. And so then they brought down a beam of light that was wider than him. And it was just this beautiful beam of light next to him. And it was larger than him. It was quite a few feet across. And they said that he deserved, after all of this frustration and trouble and work, that he deserved a moment of rest. And they asked him to step into the light, and he refused. He said he didn't want to. And so they said that this beam would give him a moment of rest, and it wouldn't hurt him. And so he decided to stick his hand in it and see what happened. So he stuck his hand in it, and nothing happened. So then he stepped into it, and then he started to smile, and then he started to laugh. And he was just became, like, just really tickled and really, like, a moment of joy came across his face. And then in this joy, it transmuted him to the higher realms. And he, the followers, like what Gene said happened after that was that the Indians that were haunting the place all disappeared. And there was this little girl that Gene had been acquainted with. And so the little girl had always said, oh, the Indians used to come and visit. So Gene asked her, well, has any of the Indians come? Have any of the Indians come to visit? And she said, oh, no, they stopped coming. And so it cleared the area of this, the Indian curse, which was really interesting because they went right to the heart of the issue that the Indians were having and helped the Indians.
Now, you know, it's one of the things that's really interesting about this is from my hearing the story again and hearing Carla's story is the fact that these things stay in kind of a locked position for years, hundreds of years, maybe even thousands of years. They don't change. Everything kind of stays frozen until someone makes a request. And then someone, it seems a little unfair in a certain way. I mean, but it feels like the situation can't change until someone down here takes a look at it and asks someone up there, can you help? What do you think about that, Terry?
I think that that speeds things up when somebody makes requests and then the higher groups can come in and help. But I think that earth changes are one of the things that naturally make those kinds of things change. I think if the person's stuck in a body and the body hasn't decayed yet, then if the body eventually decays, I think this loosens the hold of the person on the body, and then the being can move on. So there are some natural things that help to change situations.
I think the reason that our energy is necessary is that they are here. their personality shell is here. It's not all of them, because when you die, that personality that you were drifts away. Personality is just what you've brought with you in your suitcase. It's not all of your true attributes. It can stay until someone on this realm, whether it's in the astral plane or in the physical plane, adds energy to it. For instance, I remember in one of my readings about 911, Kuo was telling us about how they had the Manahatta Indians of New York that were native to that little island there that turned into Manhattan, was named after them. On the astral plane, they were there, and they rounded up a lot of people that didn't realize they were dead, had no idea. They didn't know what, they were just wandering around looking for the stairs, looking for something, and having no sense of time or place, just wandering. And they got them there, and they made a campfire on the 35th floor. And they were telling stories until these people sort of came to themselves and realized it was time to move on. So the kindness of somebody in this realm, either ascended masters that have decided to stick around like those Indians, or people like Terry or I that have a kind heart and understand that people need closure, and are grateful to somebody that gives them, you know, the information so they can do that. It's just a matter of kindness to find out the story, you know, instead of being scared, oh, my God, there are ghosts there. You say, okay, well, let's find out what's going on. And you get an impression. You might not get everything about the story, but you get enough of an impression that you know how to help them clear, how to help them find closure. Whether it's the way Terry did it, or whether it's the way I did it with the reading of a funeral service and a burial service. So
that's probably why funerals actually are very important.
Very important. Yes, it's a closure, and it helps a lot of times. The people are there at their own funeral. They stick around and they want to see the funeral. They want to see who came, you know. and they want to see how it goes, and it's closure for them. Oh yeah, I really must be dead. Oh, my gosh, I'm having a funeral, so that helps them a lot, and so they're able to go on. It also helps those of us who are behind, because it's a closure for us. It's a way for us to participate. And a lot of people just, oh my God, this is so stupid. You know, you spend so much money, it's not worth it. Well, it really is worth it. I'm not saying that it's worth it to buy a heavenly dream cast at the cost of, you know, $7,000. But it's worth it to have the funeral. It's worth it to have the memorial service and have everybody tell good stories about you and laugh and remember you and bless you on your way and just, you know, have that moment with you, that precious moment before people go on with their lives, then you go on with your adventure elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
you know,
it's good to know this, because you don't have to be scared about dying.
Mm-hmm.
Stories like this really, really add into that. You don't have to be scared. It's a process as natural as birth. And, you know, you ride in on your horse, which is your electrical body, and you insert yourself into the physical body along the spine, from the base of the spine right up to the top of the head, and you have that connection with the spine, and then when the body becomes unviable and you no longer can use it, then you remove your electrical body from the physical body again, and you ride off. You don't lose a thing in death any more than you've lost it coming in life. You just simply move on and go on to other new adventures. And All throughout, I've heard over and over again, you're protected in the arms of the infinite creator. There's no mm-hmm. way the creator is going to let you slip away or have a bad experience. You're safe. You're always perfectly safe. The angels, there are angels that are right there. Their job is to make sure that everything goes well.
When you say electrical body,
mm-hmm.
That's really you mean the soul, correct? Or another way of saying the soul?
You can say soul. I like the name spirit, although spirit is more vague. I like being vague mm-hmm. because I don't think we really understand precisely what the makeup of the spirit or soul is. I think the words are roughly interchangeable because we really mm-hmm. don't know. But I think that you carry with you, like I said, you carry what you're going to bring into this incarnation. Like you pack your suitcase with all the personality that, you know, traits that you've decided will help you with your incarnational lessons. You know, maybe you decided that you want to learn to love others without expectation of return. Maybe you've decided mm-hmm. that you want to work on patience, or you've decided, well, I'm too wise. I'd like to open my heart more. And so you put these traits in, and you choose relationships. You arrange, you make contracts with lots of people. Say, well, I'm going to run into you in this life, and if it's the right time and it works out, then let's do this together. So you make contracts with lots of people, and it's very redundant. If you miss one person that you should have had a relationship with, don't worry. You're going to run into another one and another one. It's very redundant. But, you know, you're safe. You're going to find one of these intended relationships, and you'll start running with that one because it's irresistible. Eventually, you're going to have to do it. But, mm-hmm. you know, there are all these things that you choose from your complete self. So while you're bringing your complete self into this lifetime, you're not bringing it in on the conscious level. Your traits don't exhaust your entire being. They're just those few things that you brought with you because they were going to help you serve, they were going to help you learn your lessons. And mm-hmm. So you brought with you a lot of things that you will only get in touch with if you decide to do some form of seeking the silence. Now, you can call it meditation. I like the term seeking the silence because really, whether you seek the silence by going into nature or by meditating or praying or keeping a journal and contemplating, there are all different kinds of ways to seek the silence. But that's the place, the silence, where all the true information comes. That's where you get the most important information you'll ever get, because that's where your consciousness can bloom. That's where the you that is more than your personality, more than the you that's conscious, can bloom and can communicate with your waking consciousness. So, you know, spending time in the silence is very, very helpful.
You know, Carla, it's amazing you brought that up, because before we started the call this morning, I was doing like a little, I guess you call it tuning meditation, just laying there. And what was coming up in my mind was, on this call, I wanted to talk about discipline and journaling and meditation and things that people can do to anchor the energies for themselves. You know, it's easy to come to this call, for some of you, and you pick up on the energies of the call and feel a certain, you feel things shift, move, depressions leave. I know that happens for a lot of people. And the thing about it is that the goal is to anchor those things in your life. You know, there's a another thought, I don't know if I heard this from somebody, but it's either you're creating your life or you're being created on. And if you are not actively creating in some way, shape, or form, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be creating in terms of meditating, creating in terms of calling your old relatives and saying hello, but doing a volitional action that keeps energy in motion. Because if the energy is not in motion, it stays still. And if it stays still, other energies that are in motion will act upon your still energy and will take it over. And in most cases, it's got a service to self aspect to it, because this realm is filled with energies that are looking for still energies. And when I say still, I don't mean that's kind of not the best word to use, because still can also sound like spiritual stillness. I'm talking about unfocused energy. Energy that's hanging out, that's not contained. That is just, it's there, and you watch TV, and boom, your energy's contained by the energy on the TV, or the newspaper, or what everyone thinks is true. And so that's one of the things that happens in this realm that's so difficult, is that people, instead of creating their life, they are kind of sliding through, and other things take them over, and they don't realize it. And that can happen for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, where you keep just being at the effect of other forces that create you, or create not really who you really are, but create your how you feel, what you think in that lifetime.
That's so true. And Ross says at one point, when Don's asking about, well, what can I do to take hold and begin to accomplish things with my life to shape it? And Ross says, well, the prerequisite of mental work is the ability to retain silence of self at a steady state. The mind must be open like a door. The key is silence. So it goes on to talk about various things that you do to discipline your mind. The first discipline being to find what you like and what you don't like, and then to balance it. I've talked a lot about balancing. But to balance and to see that the mind contains all things, and so you have to discover just completeness within yourself. Then the second mental discipline is the acceptance of that completeness. So you can't pick and choose among attributes, because that's the way you build the roles that you choose that cause blockage. If you choose that, oh, okay, I am this role that I'm playing, this is me, then you keep yourself from being who you most fundamentally are. And then the third discipline is realizing that everybody else out there contains completeness. So it's good to be able to understand each person in a balanced way. If you see that person is impatient, you have to be able to see from a soul level to see, well, he has impatience and patience, and you can trust that he has both. And then you're dealing with that person at the level at which is truth. So the truth of yourself is that you contain everything, and the truth of others is that they contain everything. And so then you simply accept. You accept yourself, you accept other people for containing it all, and that gives you a complete free choice as to how you want to build how you want to build your life. But the key to the beginning of these contemplations is silence. And I love that, because it doesn't say, oh, you must meditate. It doesn't say, oh, you must pray. It says, become silent. Stop taking part of the buzz. You know, turn off the TV, turn off the computer game, turn off the phone calls that just say, well, I'm going to the grocery. Well, I've decided I'm going to get some pizza sauce. What kind do you get? You know, those little calls that take up the time and are fun. But if you want silence, you know, you just turn that off for a while. Or go for a walk in nature and let your mind drift and let things rise and fall without following them. That's another way of silence. Well, there are all kinds of ways of silence. The classic ones are sung, but there are other non-classic ones that work just as well.
You know, people say, I know some people that try to be silent, and their mind is just chatting away.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do this, I got to do that. You know, if you find yourself in that space, it's okay. It doesn't mean you're not succeeding.
Just don't follow it. You know, accept
start,
it. Oh, I'm thinking about that, okay. And let it fall. Let it go away. Don't follow
just
it.
Just observe everything and let it go. Just observe it. And even if you're observing it a month later, keep up the process. Because the more you observe yourself, the part of you that's observing is separated itself from the part of you that's trapped. You follow that? It's like a part of all of us is trapped. Part of us is all of us has become conditioned by the matrix, by the realities that are trying to create us. And it's okay. It's like you can't fight your way out of that. The first step is to recognize that that's true. The second step is to keep observing yourself so that you can make mental notations of how you are trapped. See the traps. And as this is where journaling is good, to write it down, because that really anchors it, it grounds it, and helps you remember. And the more you do that, the more you start moving through things. And to be patient, realize that this most definitely works, but it may not work like right now.
It's a process. It's really
process.
A process. One of the greatest things that you'll find is that the biggest trap is judgment. When you're trapped in judgment of somebody, you're locked into you're playing a role, that person is playing a role. And no matter how true it may seem, it's not true of the person as a soul. It's trapping you. And so if you want to fight your way free of that, you forgive. That stops the wheels of karma. You now are free. Forgiveness frees you like nothing else. And you can shake off the judgment. And it certainly may still be true that that person has done this and it wasn't a wise choice. And you can see that. Okay, that was really stupid, that was inappropriate. You can see that. It doesn't matter how true that is. You just have to forgive it and move on, because in doing so, you free yourself from being locked into a lower vibration relationship. And you've chosen in forgiveness to have a higher, much higher vibration relationship, and the more you can keep to that, the freer that you are to choose your own way, to be the boss of you.
You know, there was a great quote that I sent out today. I don't know, you probably don't read the quotes, but when I sent out the notice for Sunday, I usually pick a topic and put some quotes in. I had one of those quotes that I just kept looking at. And said, this is good. And it had to do with if you're going to put somebody in their place, make sure you pick them up first. Mm. You get that?
Got that.
Got it, yeah. And this is something I've learned. It's like, for example, you know, we know there's a lot of negative in the world. We know that there's a lot of conditioning in the world. We know that it exists. And we talk about it a little bit on these calls peripherally. We don't focus on it. And the reason is that we're all still lifting each other up. And it's good to know about negative stuff from the point of view of discernment. Discernment's very important. And that it's a deep topic to figure out how to discern the negative in this realm, because it's so well hidden. And you can't even believing me is not discernment. Believing Kala is not discernment. Believing the Elohim is not discernment, because you're still allowing someone else to make the decision for you. And it is so important to make those decisions for yourself, because the critical time for a decision, you may not have anyone to ask who you can trust at that moment. And what if the person you trust happens to make a mistake? So, therefore, the key of learning discernment in this realm, learning to see things as they are. And I would imagine that carries through into other realms as well, because I'm sure, or I suspect, I'll ask Carla and Terry this one, I suspect on the other side, not every being is positive, that there are dark beings there that would pull you in a certain direction that would end up being considered negative. And how are you going to recognize a dark being? See, the problem is if you're when you're in a desperate state, it's very hard to have good discernment, because you're kind of desperate, and desperateness makes you grasp for things that could ultimately be much worse than the desperateness you were feeling, but you can't see it. But Terry had two situations. There's been two situations with Terry on our calls where I've observed her dealing with someone who was on the other side. One of them was with John Sanborn, her dear friend, who was kind of this obstinate guy, but very loving in his own way, and very bossy also. And he and I kind of got along like cats and dogs, even though I kind of liked him. And that when he died, we had a whole, I think, two calls on this in our archives. Just look up Sanborn and the Spirit Channel, S-A-N-B-O-R-N. These were two really great calls where Terry had gone up to the hospital. He had a car accident, and he was passing. And what happened, Terry?
I was hoping that he would recover, but his body was shutting down, so the hospital told me that there was no way that he was going to survive unless for some miracle, and if he did survive, that things would be very tough for him because all of his ribs were out of place and broken on one side from the car accident, and his body was shutting down, so... I stayed overnight in the hospital and just stayed with him, and his daughter came during the days, and he stopped breathing, and after he stopped breathing, I had noticed an angel coming, and the angel was really kind of stocky and larger than John. John was over 6 feet. The angel was even taller and very stocky, like a sumotomo wrestler. And the angel's physique was like, I think, grounding for John, because he was so stable and stocky. And so after he stopped breathing, Jane, John's daughter, said, "Do you see the angels?" And I said, "Yes." And so I turned to John who is out of his body now, and I said, let the angel show you where the entrance to the tunnel of light is. And I said, don't give the angels any trouble, because I needed some humor there, and I thought John needed that. And so John allowed the angel to guide him into the entrance to the tunnel of light. And I was so scared John would back out or something that I went in after him. And the tunnel of light was a circular of a light, and it was like a circular tunnel. And the light was circling. I mean, there was rings of light, one after another, all the way up. And it was like a circulating intensity that was diffusing any problems or any stuck tensions on that the being that was going through the tunnel of light had. It's like a translation of the person's frequency in the third density and getting them to higher densities, increasing the frequency of light as the person went up the tunnel. And John turned around. I said to John, I said, go find Robert Frost, because Robert Frost was a dear friend of John's, and John really missed him. He used to go up to Frost's cabin, and John used to write poetry. And so I said, go find Robert Frost. And John turned around and said, come with me. And I said, you need to go first and check things out. And John said, again, he said, come with me. And I said, no, he needed to go first and check things out. I said that again. And he said, well, will you be all right here? And I said, yeah, I'll be all right. And he said, he didn't really believe me. And so he said, are you sure you're going to be all right here? And I said, yes. And so Jane said, go find the poetry corner, because John was really a great writer. And so and I said, again, go find Robert Frost. And so John turned around, and I started forward and went real fast. And then I turned around and got out of the tunnel of light, because it was starting to diffuse my energy from the third density. And so 3 days later, there was like an opening, and I could see John in the heavenly realm sitting at a table. And there was another fellow, Ed Vincent, that had died a few years before. It was a dear friend of John's and mine, and he was sitting at the table. And I could see Renee Duke, who was a dear friend of John's and mine, sitting at the table. And John had always had this immense fondness for Renee and for her five sons in his life. And she was sitting there too. And John was so excited, and he was just telling them about this, how he got there. And so John picked up, he just continued his life over there with his friends. And he came back then again to visit in a few weeks. And he was wearing the most beautiful sweater. It was like a forest green stripe around the chest. And then it was a lighter kind of greenish gray above and below the stripe. And he'd never owned a sweater like that. And he came back, and he gave me a big hug, and he said, well, we almost made it this lifetime. And so I would get impressions. He loved to read, and that there was some library over there that he was just devouring information. And he just really was having a good time over there, and people were working with him and diffusing any problems that he had in this life. And I felt like that's how things should go, really. That there is the other realm that people can go to and get debriefed.
So what was your...
It's called the healing of the incarnation. And they're very careful to keep that up until you're all healed up from this experience.
Yes.
But I think you have to choose that, right? On some level.
You're put there after the level at which you're simply with the people with whom you want to be. There's
right.
that. There's that. And that happens, that goes on as long as you want. And then when you're ready to move on, then you go into the healing of the incarnation. And after that, then you get to start choosing the incarnation, you know, onward. Like if it's in fourth density and you've graduated, you get to start planning from a much more, you know, happy and encouraging bunch of choices on the menu of what you can do next, because there's a lot more information in fourth density,
a lot more
things that you could choose to do, and there are teachers for anything you want to learn. But it's a simple process. It's the same for everybody, and there's no limit to the amount of time or perceived time that you can spend according to those of Ra. You take it at your own speed. If you want to spend a lot of time with your mom and your dad and Jesus, you will. And when you're finally ready to move on, then you'll go into the healing of the incarnation. And there are always angels around. It's like Terry said, you know, there was an angel there waiting to guide him through that tunnel of light. And within that tunnel of light were the steps of light, where it kept getting more and more dense. The light kept getting more and more bright. And so he was able to choose just how much light he wanted to have from now on. And if that light was fourth density light, then he just graduated. And if it was still in third density, then he was going to have more third density experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No
mm-hmm.
judgment, no agony, no angst, no nothing. Just, okay, this is the way it is, and, you know, now let's go on to the next. It's so lovely that there's no necessity for fear. I've never felt that it was something to emphasize because of the fact you'd find people committing suicide just to get there. You know, God, this life is so hard. I think I'd like to get to that. But it's so much more important that we just chew the heck out of this life and get all the good out of it, because it's hard to get into third density at the end of the round. You know, there were like hundreds and hundreds of people that were fighting for the opportunity of this one body, and we won because we had seniority by vibration. Our vibration was higher. There was more of a chance that we would be able to serve.
You know, one of the things that I have read many times is one of the reasons that having a body is so desirable is because that in this realm you can advance spiritually faster than any place else.
Much faster.
And I can intuit how that's true, because in this realm, so many frequencies are available so fast, and so many people that hold different frequencies are available, and that if you pick and choose the right things, you get to the express train back to God, and you can't do that in the other realms.
Well, the reason you can't do it, according to Ra, is really simple. When you get out of this incarnation, in between incarnations, you know everything, You know everything. You know the truth of everything. You understand how it all works. There are no questions in your mind. So you can live a life in that state, but there's no challenge there. You get in, you know, there's, and therefore it doesn't go very deep. It's not very interesting. But you get into this very heavy illusion, and you have to move by faith. Faith is the only thing that works. You can't, you don't know things for sure. You have to intuit. You have to go with what you feel is right. You discriminate. You use your insight. And it's a very personal journey that you're going through. And you've described it so often well, Wynn. But working by faith alone, you make your choices. And you get on that express train because you have faith. Because you say, I believe this to be true, and this is who I am, and so this is what I'm going to do. And so it's hard, and you work hard for it, and therefore it goes so deep, and you earned it, you know. And that goes much deeper into when the changes are so much more rapid, because you've earned them. They're not just exercises in right living, then you know the right. You already know all the right answers. You know, you could look at the back of the book. This is not a test where you can look in the back of the book. This is all on your own. And when you do well here, your accomplishment goes so much deeper and so much more of a change occurs within your totality of personality that you came in here with.
You know, I'd like to insert here that if you're one of those people that are having a really difficult, tough life, please take this to heart, because there's something there that you're supposed to unfold. There's something there, and don't keep looking for it till you find it, because that will change the outward circumstances. But you have to find that thing, and maybe you came into this life to find it. And I think there are things that you have to take a body for to get the experience to move through. And if you've taken a body, that's probably true for you. And don't begrudge the fact that you're in a body. Figure it out. You know, we're getting so many tools on these calls and in our archives and the work we're doing. But you can take these tools. What good is a screwdriver if it never hits the screw, right? So, what a good image, right? You got to take these tools and find the screws and tighten them up, so to speak, or loosen them up, or hit the nail, whatever. It's like, these are tools. These are not answers. They're tools that you have to apply. And you know what? I want to go on and do our visualization. And anything either Carla or Terry want to say before I do that?
Well, I think I've chewed my time up pretty well, Wynn. I just thank you for letting me get all of that stuff told, because it was good stuff.
Well, you know what? This is one of those calls where you and Terry, I think, shared some really important things, and it was good for me to just provoke the topic, you know? And thank you for sharing that. I think this is extremely important topic, because everyone in 3D is concerned about dying. On some level, there's some aspect of us, even when we hear it over and over again, it's attached to this flesh and bone suit that we're wearing, and we don't want to let go of it. And I don't think you can hear enough from people that speak from experience how things actually work. when your body disappears, when you drop your body. So I thank you both for sharing. Anything you want to say, Terry?
It's such an important topic, and there's so much needed to know. People just don't know enough, and so I appreciate the time that I'm able to share this with you.
Mm-hmm. And I think the idea of praying for people that are dead, that have passed, that you know, I mean, what I get is that they, in many instances, they can hear you. You know, there was, my sister died, and that was a year ago or something. And, you know, they told her husband, I asked a question on behalf of her husband, who was going through a lot of grief, and they told him that she was hanging around him, which I'm sure is the case quite often when people have had a very close proximity relationship for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they told Larry to keep talking to Joanne out loud all the time because she could hear him. She was very frustrated because there she was hanging out in his space, and he thought she was gone, and yet she was right there watching him, feeling very lonely and estranged, and that if he spoke to her, it would help her. And that was the guidance, and I'm sure that guidance is true for many of you who have close ones that are still in the astral. I think when you move through the astral, then that, you go beyond that, and you no longer can hear somebody. You're above that level. But the astral is very close to this level, and people can hang out there for a long time before they move to the next place. And, you know, it's interesting, the Mormons have this whole thing where they keep logs of all the dead and pray for them. I don't know if it's still connected energetically, but that was one of... Did you know about that, Carla?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it just happens to be true that it works just fine. And
mm-hmm.
I think that when there's love involved, even if the person has gone on and is having a wonderful experience, there is still that tendril that touches back into the person, in the beloved one in this. And when that person talks, that person is heard because the other one wants to hear you, and so there is a connection that never goes away, no matter where the other person goes. That connection is still there, and of course, once you yourself come close to moving into the other realm, that person is coming to meet you and rejoicing.
Mm-hmm. As Terry was mentioning, one of the halfway houses is meeting up with all your old friends and family in the other side, which perhaps is what Christianity calls heaven. I don't know. But let's move on, and thank you both very much for sharing your experiences in these areas. So we're going to realize that we are masters of our consciousness. Whatever we project on, we're there. Whoever we project on, we're there. We don't violate free will. We don't go where we're not wanted. But there's a lot of people that want you and that you want in a very free will loving space. And we're all connected. We're all manifesting.
original energy, the one infinite creator, the first awareness. And everything in the universe is a manifestation of that. So we take this moment right now to experience that. To feel, we start out with the earth. And each of us, wherever we are on this planet, has the same earth underneath them. And can you feel the earth moving through your floor, moving through your feet? Put your feet flat on the ground and parallel to the floor, and the energies of the earth moving up through the floor, through your feet. Just imagine for a moment, we have people all over the world listening right at this moment. Imagine that our feet were all connected through the earth, which they probably are. And that, think of all those people who are connected to you right now through your feet and the earth. And let's just send love in that direction. And we move this energy up through our legs, through our calves, through our solar plexus, through our chest, through our neck, and into our head. And we can feel that total connection with the earth and the grounded part of each other right in this moment. And we move through our head, just above our head. And we just imagine our energy above our head, say about a foot, coming from the center of the earth, through the floor, through your feet, and whoosh, right up the top of your head, and to your ceiling, and through the ceiling, and into the sky. And through the sky, through the clouds, through this veil surround the earth, through the stars and the planets, finally converging, all of our energies converging touching each other, blending temporarily. Outside of your personality, projected from your body, but not in your body. Feel that big swirl of energies up there. All of us swirling, turning, feeling each other. And let's just tell each other we love each other. We need each other to do this. So we have this swirling light energy that we're creating way in another dimension. We can't see it, but we can feel it. And we can invite those positive sources in other dimensions to join with us. Notice how the silence feels. You know, if you have trouble finding silence, try meditating, try listening to some of our Sunday calls. Some people have discovered that. It's okay to listen to this call to help tune you in, particularly this part of it. And now we're going to take this energy, which we have accessed, this blending of energies of ourselves and those beings in other dimensions that want to participate, and we're going to bring it back down through all the realms, through the sky, through the ceiling, through the top of our head, some of you are feeling that glowing energy around the top of your head. You know, you've seen pictures of people with auras of light around their head, with chakras being open and all these colors. You're feeling right now what those pictures were trying to depict. Now we're going to move this energy through your body. And, you know, all of us have bodies that have blockages in them. Every one of us has places in our body where the energy isn't flowing. Or we've had a hurt. Or we've had an abuse. Or we've had a trauma. Where we feel guilty. And in this exercise, we want to move this energy coming in from very high places through the body and clearing those places of blockage. Okay? So we start at the top of our heads. And just imagine a plane of light. It's moving, it's transparent, and that can move through space, and it's just moving down through your body, and everything it touches, it's clearing, it's releasing, it's letting go. We're releasing everything into the higher realms to be dispersed. Go down. Our eyes, our ears, our mouth, our neck. We do get people that email me all the time that report some kind of miracle taking place as they do this. So imagine that can happen for you. Down through the chest. Take a deep breath. Everybody has a little congestion. I won't say everybody, but most of us have a little congestion in our chest. Why do we have congestion in our chest? It's because it's where our heart is located. Not just our physical heart, our spiritual heart, our loving heart, our compassionate heart. And it's the area that we pull things into to block and hold the energy in a fixed rigidity. How do we pull things in? we judge somebody, we make somebody wrong, we hurt somebody, somebody betrayed us, somebody abandoned us. Somebody abused you sexually. Yes, it was horrible. Yes, you felt terrible. Yes, you hated them. The problem is, if you continue to hate them, you are taking up space in your heart. And as we've learned, in this lifetime, the heart chakra has to be open, at least half, slightly more than half, to graduate this realm. Don't let that hate for that person take up any percentage points in your heart. Don't let it happen. Let it go. It doesn't mean you have to be their friend. It doesn't mean you have to look at them when they pass you on the street. It just means don't carry it in. Inside you. Take a deep breath. Ah, let it all out. Let it go. Let it release. Person that stole your money. The husband that betrayed you but went out with other women. The wife that did the same. How many ways does this realm have for people to close their hearts, to be revengeful, to be resentful, to be contemptful? Let it go. You are only hurting yourself. Go from our heart into our solar plexus, into our power chakra, into our second chakra, our sexual chakra. This is an area where you can apply Shakespeare to thine own self be true. Everyone has a different nature. Learn to understand your nature. Learn how to express your nature without hurting anybody or letting yourself be hurt. Learn to be very honest with people. Go through your legs, your calves, back to the earth. So experience right now how it feels. Your body is in the center of the universe, your universe. From the celestial realms down to the earth. And the universe is a small place. It seems really big when you compare it to your body. But it's not so big when you can compare it to your energy field. Your energy field can encompass the universe. You know, as you start doing these expansions, and then you look at yourself, look at your lower self. You can see it from higher places. And your wisdom comes in, your ability to observe. And you also have a reference point for what Carla means by the silence. I don't have to talk. Space is there. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect everyone on this line. And any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the outer energy field of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us. We create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. And Terry, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you. We're ready for a broadcast.
All right. Okay. So where are we in that? I'm calling in the light.
We just finished going in the light.
All right. Give me a minute. This is Ra On, and we are here. We take a moment, and from this, ask that point in New York, we greet each and every person on the line, not from New York, but individually from right where you are in your own particular space. We take a look at the third density and we see the tremendous need for information, for the work that you are doing to reach many people so that they will have the opportunity to orient themselves to their life, where they are, what will happen, where they have been, so that they can make more sense and they can plan for their life, know the importance, each and every one of you, to know the importance of your life and the significance of your life towards your own growth, and that it is not just an ending. It is, in a way, each day a new beginning towards the growth that you are being presented with the opportunity to take, to achieve. We are thankful for each and every volunteer that is working to get this information, these channelings, the information of Carla and Wynn and Daphne out to individuals and make it available to help orient each of you that you are not just in an isolated, separated state that is not connected with anything else, and that it is a very important lifetime towards achieving the growth and fulfillment of your own self and connecting you up with humanity and the higher realms so that you know you are a treasured part of all and that there is assistance out there. There is information out there that you can access and will help ground you and put your own center, align you to your center so that you're able to walk the path and achieve the lessons that you have come to receive. We thank you for this opportunity to serve. Thank you.
Thank you. Take a moment, and we all have our personal requests. We have the people that have put their requests in our healing list. And let us take a couple of moments of silence and bring all of those things that we would like to change in our life, in the lives of the people around us, not that you can change it, but support their wish for change. And for our planet, all those things of shift, that we are creators, and this is a time to move into your ability to create. To create. You see how it works? You drop thoughts into this higher space from a pure place for the highest good of all concerned, honoring free will. You drop your thoughts, your needs, your visions, your hopes, your dreams into that place above this realm and see it precipitating, see it moving through, that it comes to pass and that you accept the assistance of all of those positively disposed beings, entities, groups, souls that are available to help. But you must ask in purity, service, and service to yourself as well as others. It's okay to be abundant. It's okay to be healthy. It's okay to ask. It's okay to do those things. And moving through those areas where you've been blocked, where you've held yourself, you are the creator. So if something's happening, it's your creation. Not necessarily your fault, because you have been created upon. And oftentimes, you are have been stuck in your ability to create because you have been projecting out a creation that has been projected onto you, which has kept you from your ability to create. Right now, move into your ability to be a creator, to be one with other creators, to be worthy of help and support. Right now, see it. We send special light to Marsha in Panorama City for personal healing, emotional, spiritual, financially. Asking, please, for assistance and grace to learn, to stay open, to grow, and to heal. Some of you have a certain lesson to learn
before you can master this, before you can become abundant. Ask yourself, what is the lesson? Get it over with. Learn it. Okay? We have Pat in Alabama. Keeping her older daughter in the light and her finances in the light. And for Marcia and her dog. And for Lise in Wib Rock, Arizona. Helping getting her true voice back and voicing it into the world. I need people to hear me, not themselves. See me, not themselves. I cannot take being the mirror for what appears to be crazy. People all the time anymore, crazy acquaintances, crazy doctors, who all put their garbage onto me. What I say or do or think, I only want to be myself, speak for myself, free of all the other stuff. That's the person that's asking with passion. Asking with passion helps. I see her getting that. Then we have here Don. Healing, financial, and everyone on the call who needs it. Thank you. And then we have Lori in Arizona. Health, we need our health to improve and help David to give up smoking for his health. Please help us pay our bills to save our home. Lori. Get into the creative side of yourself. You know that thing, God helps them and helps themselves. What do you have to do? What do you have to do? Sometimes there's agencies that if you get on the phone and keep calling agencies, and the agencies are horrible, except they're staffed by humans, and some of those humans are very loving. And when they feel compassion for you, they can make things happen. So don't give up on agencies when things are tough. Rosalie in Dallas. She puts Penny, Steve, and Noah. Steve, Steph, Steve, and I, Eddie, Colter, and Ray to get really good jobs. But thank people that they can keep those jobs as long as they want them. What a nice way of holding space for other people, caring about them. When you see somebody doing something, you help share their vision if they'll receive it. And let's just go again, and all of us have things we want to have. Let's just, again, place those things in the highest dimension you can reach, place them like an insert into a matrix. See it filtering down with glowing colors through the matrix, precipitating, coming out in this realm as a synchronicity. Let us move into looking at our planet Earth. And we go back to being a team. Those were all the things we were doing individually for ourselves and people we individually care about. Now let's be a team. We are a team. All we have to do is intend our energies to connect. Just intend it. Boom. It's there. And working with those connected energies as a team and asking our sources to connect with those energies. And we're a huge team of planetary transformation. And that doesn't mean We don't need about a million more people on this team because we do. But we're going to work with who we have today, and each of you is holding tremendous power for this transformation, for this holding positive energy for planet Earth. And we see our energy surround the Earth. And surround the Earth in a pink glow. And we weave in and out of any of the negative energies around our planet. We find the spaces where we can flow and move closer and closer to the surface of our planet. And this energy is something that we are directing, steering. It follows our will. It's like we were asking earlier, why is it that somebody asks before the higher forces can intervene? Because that's the way it works. So we are here being the askers. And we see this cloud of energy descend upon some of those areas that are controlling our planet and putting out negative control patterns. We just ask it to surround Washington, D.C. for compassion and empathy. Los Angeles, California for positive media projects. London, Moscow, Paris. We see this energy meeting all those people who identify with being a light worker, being spiritual, being transmutation person, praying to God. However, they see their connection with higher realms. We allow ourselves to meet them, honoring their free will. You know, every week we move this energy up the Ring of Fire, which are the land masses surrounding the Pacific Ocean, which happens to be the most volatile earthquake area on the planet. And we start at the tip of South America. We can imagine this sizzling laser beam of light moving just along the coastline. Moving through the land, moving through the ground, underground to that area where there is a fault. And surrounding that fault and protecting it and asking for any releases to be away from cities are gradual. We go up the coast of South America. You see it on the map. And we go to Central America. You see it on the map. And we go up Mexico. And we go up Southern California. Chula Vista, San Diego. We get to Los Angeles, which is one of those hotbeds of earthquake faults. And we see all those faults being touched by this energy from Santa Monica inland, many miles. And those areas, south, Long Beach, and north, Malibu. And we move, keep moving up through San Francisco, another place of earthquake fault abundance. We see this energy touching all those areas in San Francisco and the East Bay, Berkeley, Oakland, etc. South San Francisco, Daly City. We move up from San Francisco across the Golden Gate Bridge to Mill Valley, to San Luis Obispo, moving up California to Mendocino, and through to Northern California, through to Oregon, and moving along the coastline of Oregon, Washington, and Vancouver. Moving up the coastline of Canada, across to Alaska, southern Alaska, close to eastern Russia. We are creating energy by our visualization, by our attention. We go down the eastern coast of Russia to Japan. We cap Fukushima radiation. We go down from Japan, Indonesia, China, Philippines, Hong Kong, Singapore. We keep moving down to Australia and New Zealand. And we move to the middle of the country. And we do the same thing with the New Madrid fault line, centered in St. Louis. And we go to the East Coast, and we do the same thing with the Mid-Atlantic fault line. And we just take our loving cloud of energy, surround the planet again, and reach all those areas where there is earthquake potential. And while we're surrounding the planet, we ask for rain for those areas where there's drought. Okay. So, it's 11:56, we've reached the end of our time for this call.